Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Today's case is going to be one that's going to drive you absolutely crazy because it makes no sense. There was no reason for this beautiful young lady to die. And this is the case of Nia Wilson. But this is also the story of a family and a community that came together to take a stand and make a change. When I was trying to come up with a name for my podcast, I went through so many different titles. And one night I was, you know, watching a true crime documentary on TV. I think it was even Dateline. And the detective was talking and he just said something like, you know, gunpowder residue. And I'm like, oh my God, residue. And then I thought, residue doesn't just have to mean something from a crime scene or something. I mean, the actual definition of residue is a small amount of something that remains after the main part has gone or been taken. And to me, that means the people that are left behind after some of these tragedies happen. And I wanted to make sure that I had given a voice to the families, to the friends, to the communities that are the ones that are left behind after someone they loved so much has been taken from them. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have found that Black women die of homicide at a rate almost higher than Hispanic, white, and Asian women combined. The homicide rate among Black women between the ages of 25 and 44 years increased by 73% between 2014 and 2020. In 2020, the homicide rate for Black women was 11.6 homicides per 100,000 women, compared to a relatively static rate of 3 per 100,000 women among white women in the same age group. The United States femicide is, and femicide means the gender-based killing of women, is often thought of as an issue affecting low-income countries, but this could not be further from the truth. Of all femicide cases in high-income countries, 70% of those occur in the United States. Nia Wilson was born November 12th, 1999. She was the youngest of nine children, so she had six sisters and two brothers. Nia's parents, Ansar Mohammed, that's her father, and Alicia Grayson, her mother, they were not together anymore, and they lived in separate cities. The dad lived in Oakland, and Nia and her sisters wanted to live in Oakland with her father. So at this time in 2018, they are living with him, but they are still so close to their mother, and their father stays in constant contact with their mother just, you know, to let each other know what's going on with the kids. Nia was a dancer. She wanted to have her own dance studio one day. She was an aspiring rapper, and she actually had a rap group with her sister, Tashaya, and that was called Girls in the Hood. You can find that album on Apple Music. Check it out. Nia was also super talented with makeup, and she was also given the nickname PG for pretty girl because, wow, is she pretty? Let me tell you, even on some of the documentaries that you watch where they show you some surveillance footage of Nia, even just her entire aura comes through the screen. And like her father said, when he thinks of Nia, he thinks of sunshine and a big, bright smile. And that is true. Nia just seemed to brighten the world around her. Her father said that she was definitely a daddy's girl, and that if she needed to contact him, he preferred phone calls over text. He said that he just felt a lot safer when he could hear his daughter's voice over the phone. especially living in Oakland, because as Nia's father stated, Oakland is a very, very nice place to live. There's a lot of wealth, but there is a lot of poverty. And if you don't know Oakland and know your way around Oakland, it can be a very dangerous and unsafe place to be. Nia especially had issues with using some of the public transportation. She definitely did not love using BART, and that is the Bay Area Rapid Transportation System. So Nia had experienced some really tragic and just horrific things for such a young girl to experience at this age. In 2016, Nia's boyfriend passed away in a boating accident. He and one of his friends had drowned, and they held a vigil. Now, at this vigil, you know, Nia's already dealing with the fact that her boyfriend and her friend have passed away. Nia is standing next to a young lady named Regina Jeffries, and Regina is celebrating the lives of her friends by performing a dance routine. And as she's performing it, you know, Nia's cheering her on and standing next to her. Out of nowhere, a car drives by and shoots bullets into this crowd of mourners. Tragically, Regina, the one dancing next to Nia, gets struck right in the neck. Nia is just struggling to just calm her down and hold her, just be with her. And Nia sits there with her until the EMTs arrive on the scene. And sadly, Regina would pass away. That story just takes my breath away. I mean, this entire story takes my breath away, but such young teenagers, such young children, like just starting life, just starting to live. And that is what Nia had to deal with? That is so crazy to me. This just gives testament to how strong Nia was, how caring Nia was. Even in a scary situation like that, she did not leave her friend's side. And then afterwards, aftermath, all of this, she had to deal with this. And she was still a loving, caring, optimistic person. That's a strong person right there. It is now July 22nd, 2018, and there is going to be a celebration of life party for Nia's family. It's for Nia's aunt, Teresa. Now, this is her father's sister. Teresa was diagnosed with cancer, and the family decided to have a celebration of life, but while Teresa could attend. And so the whole family gathers, and Nia goes with her sisters, Latifa, who is actually described as the older sister who is more like a mother figure to the sisters. And so it's going to be Latifa, Nia, and Tashaya. And they're all going to travel together to this celebration of life. And when they were going to leave, they were supposed to have a ride home. So someone from the party was going to give them a ride home, but that person decided to leave a little early, and the sisters decided to stay later than they planned on because they were having so much fun with their family. The three sisters are now going to get on a train at Concord Station, and they were going to transfer from that train onto a train at MacArthur Station, and that would be so that they could get home. They planned on calling their father once they boarded that train so that he could be waiting for them when they got off of the MacArthur train station so that he could just take them home from there. The sisters are dropped off around 9 p.m., and they take an escalator up to the platform to hop on to the next train that is going to be headed back to Oakland. And after about 15 minutes, they board. They go past four stops, and around 9:25 p.m., Latifa calls their dad just to let him know that they're close. So at this point, the sisters all exit the train. Tashaya gets onto the next train first, and she hurried because she says that she was very cold, and she kind of scurried in really quickly She sits down and she thinks her sisters are right behind her, but a woman with a baby stroller and a baby, she kind of got ahead of Nia and Latifah a little quick. Latifah describes it as the lady was, you know, getting past them with the baby, and Nia was even so excited to see the baby that she bent down and she was like, oh my God, what a cute little baby. At this point, everything happens pretty quickly. Tashaya is now sitting down and she looks up, she sees the lady come in, and she describes the next events as she saw Nia entering and boarding the train, but it almost looked like Nia had like tripped over something and was falling into the train. And then she notices the blood. Blood is pouring from Nia's neck, and Tashaya is in complete and utter shock. She has no idea what's happening. She can't comprehend what is going on. She starts to just leave the train to run for help. At this point, Latifah is holding Nia's neck, and you can see blood squirting out on all of the surveillance footage. Tashaya calls her dad, and he jumps in the car, and he gets there as soon as he can. At this point, Latifah is also stabbed in the neck, but she is not worried about her neck. She is worried about her baby sister. So she is trying everything she can to place her hands around Nia's neck. The woman with the baby stroller from earlier as they were boarding, she throws Latifah a baby blanket and she tells her to use this to help stop the blood. Latifah is just running on adrenaline at this point, and as the EMTs and the police jump onto the train to try to help them, they're like, you're hurt. Like, you need to go to the hospital as soon as possible. And they, at about 9:52 p.m., they load Latifah into the ambulance, and this is when their father is arriving. As Ansar arrives, he says that he ran up the stairs at Bart, and he says, and I see my daughter's body under a tarp. It was the hardest experience in my life, seeing my baby dead. This is some of the hardest footage I have ever watched. Nia's father is so emotional as he delivers that statement, and all of this is caught on tape. The EMTs, the police, the fire department, everyone arrived within 42 seconds after this happening. This place was just mobbed now, and her father arrives, and this is what he's seeing. There is news footage of Tashaya, and she is just wailing. It's even hard to even talk about. Chills are running down my entire body when I even just explain this video to you. It's all just so chilling, and even telling this story, I've recorded over and over. I've had to go back and delete because I cry so much when I tell these stories, and I know that it's something that I'm going to have to stop doing because I decided to do a true crime podcast, but I had to take a break just to tell this part. And I really struggled with how to tell this part of the story because this story is so based on video. It's very visual, a lot of what happens, because you have to see it to believe it, because it doesn't make any sense. Like, why did this happen? Why were they put in the path of this psychopath at the right time to come across such a piece of shit? I'm sorry, I'm gonna say it. This man, obviously this man isn't the smartest person to live, because how the hell would you not know? There are video cameras everywhere. And let me tell you, these video cameras, these surveillance cameras, they caught this motherfucker's every fucking step, everything he did after this. It is the most horrifying shit to see a video of these three just fucking beautiful, innocent sisters just walking onto a train to get home after celebrating the life of one of their family members. And this fucker, this fucking piece of shit. I know I should erase that too, because I shouldn't be so over emotional and swearing so much and losing my mind on this, but I have to. I can't take it. I cannot stand this man. So, I didn't even get to that part with you guys yet, but obviously somebody stabbed these two sisters, and you know what? This person was probably going to stab Tashaya too if she didn't get on before everyone else and sit down. And that's just even more of a nightmare to think about. So, when you watch these videos, you can clearly see there is a white male who is standing at the top of the escalator. I have chills on my body again describing this. So, he's standing at the top of the escalator as the sisters are coming up it to get on the last train before they can go home. You will see a white male standing on the side watching everyone come up the escalator. You can see exactly at the moment that he notices these three sisters, and he decides to, at that point, put his hood up on his hoodie and board the same exact train that they are on. This train goes past four stops, and now it's coming into the MacArthur bus station, and they are all going to have to get off this train, and this is the moment that Tashaya boards first, the baby stroller comes on next, and then what Latifa describes as a pop. You hear that once, you hear that again, and that's when Nia enters the train and falls down. Next, you hear the pop again on Latifa, and what had happened is this man had followed them on the video footage. You can see him following the girls onto the next train. He takes a knife out from his ankle like he had it in his sock. He holds the knife just clear as day next to his leg. He walks with a bit of a weird floppy limp. And he walks up behind Nia. He takes his butcher knife and he just stabs her in the neck. Stabs her in the neck again, and then goes for Latifa. Stabs Latifa in the neck, a real quick stab, and he goes to get her again, but he loses his balance. It's at this point he turns around and he runs off. You can see Latifa on the surveillance footage after she's been stabbed. She turns her head quickly to the left, maybe to get a glimpse of who just did this to her. He takes off. He's not actually running. He's going, you know, normal pace. He's walking a little quicker, almost like he's late for a train. But what happens is the next camera is going to be the body cam of a police officer is going to actually catch this man running past the police officers as they're trying to figure out where to go, what just happened. And you know what he does? He turns to them and he tells them it's that way. He tells the police officers where to go. He then enters a parking lot building, a garage, parking garage, and as if he doesn't know that cameras ever existed, he now enters the garage. He goes towards a corner. He is carrying a backpack. He takes the backpack off. He takes his hoodie off. He takes a different hoodie from out of the backpack, and then he puts his blood-stained hoodie into this backpack. He then throws this backpack into a corner and he takes off with his new hoodie on. He's in the middle of the parking garage, and what he does is he takes off his what look like Adidas sneakers. He takes them off while standing up with his feet. He takes off his pants, and underneath his pants he has a pair of shorts on. And now he puts his shorts and his sneakers in his hand and he runs. He floppily runs towards the corner of the parking garage, and now he's out of sight. The next camera is going to pick him up at a bus stop. He's going to be standing at a bus stop waiting for a bus. And now in Oakland, it's a well-known fact that if you're hurt and it's late at night and you're in a bad area, the bus driver is going to give you a free ride to where you need to go. So the bus opens, and now from the bus cameras, you can see the suspect telling the bus driver that he's hurt, his ankle is hurt, he needs to get a ride home. He now gets on the bus, and he thinks he's getting away. This bus driver actually takes him to another BART station. He might think that he has just had the greatest getaway. And the funny thing is that he left his ID and that book bag that the cameras caught him putting in a corner. So of course the police retrieve the book bag, they get his ID, they get his name, they get his address, they blast him all across the news. So now, you know what? Be on the lookout for John Lee Cowell. John Lee Cowell, who was a 27-year-old white male who was just released from prison only a few months before his attack on Nia and Latifah. John Lee Cowell was convicted of second-degree robbery and assault with a deadly weapon in 2016. He was paroled in May of 2018 after being sentenced to 2 years in prison for second-degree robbery. This was according to the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Also in 2016, Cowell was arrested for petty theft, illegal possession of tear gas, possession of an illegal smoking device, and drug possession, but these charges were dismissed due to the robbery conviction. 4 days before the stabbings occurred, John Lee Cowell was confronted also for not paying his BART fare. It is also noted that John Cowell was homeless before the attack on the Wilson sisters. The police acted quick in this, and paramedics and fire were there within 42 seconds, as I said earlier, but even in just getting his name out there and getting the public aware, it happened all very quickly. So it is now 12:30 p.m. the next day. It is now July 23rd, 2018, and social media is going crazy for this. Everybody wants to get their hands on John Lee Cowell. This community is just demanding justice. I mean, even celebrities are tweeting. Everyone is tweeting hashtag say her name. And there was a story I read that Steph Curry raised $21,000 in the manhunt for John Cowell. The public is aware of him. They know his name. They've seen his picture. And the police are just asking everybody to call us right away if you see this man. The police get a phone call really quickly, and this phone call comes from an anonymous caller who is on a bus headed towards BART station, and she tells them that she is on the same bus as she thinks the man that they are looking for. So they figure, okay, well, we know where this bus is headed, so the police wait, and they think, we got him. We're going to get onto this next train, and we're going to find him. But they get on the train, and he's not there. The next thing you'll see on all of the surveillance footage is that one of the police officers' body cams is standing in front of another train that is arriving. The train doors open, and there is standing John Cowell, and he just says, "What happened?" Less than 24 hours later from the stabbing, it is now 6:27 p.m. on July 23rd. 2018, and John Lee Cowell is arrested at Pleasant Hill BART station. John Cowell would be held at Santa Rita Jail in Dublin without bail, and he would be arrested and booked on charges of first-degree murder, assault with a deadly weapon, and violation of parole. At this point, his arraignment was going to be scheduled for July 26th, 2018, but that was postponed until August 22nd. And on August 22nd, the Alameda County prosecutors added an extra charge of lying in wait. This charge means that if he's convicted, he was going to have to face life without parole or even face the possibility of the death penalty. And what do you think that John Cowell is going to say in his defense? He's going to plead insanity. His family even releases a statement, and they extend their sympathy to the Wilson family, and they do say that their son has had a long, suffering life of mental illness. He has been in and out of jail and has not had the proper treatment, said the statement. He's been diagnosed with bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, said the family, and they had to get a restraining order at one point for their own protection. That's when they say that their son has been living on the streets ever since. The Wilson family is now going to express a lot of doubt that the suggestion of Cowell having a mental illness was behind the attack, and I agree with them. Ansar says, basically, it's an excuse. I hate to say that, but you know, why would you choose two young black girls? That's all I want to say. Malika Harris was Nia's sister, and she agreed with Ansar. She says he wasn't mentally ill. He was well aware of everything that was going on. If he was mentally ill after this incident, why go change your clothes? Why would you change your clothes and wipe off the knife? And that is exactly what my thoughts were when I saw that surveillance footage. You're not mentally ill. You targeted these specific girls, and you know why, and this should have been prosecuted as a hate crime, 100%. The quotes I just read to you from Nia's father and sister, Malika, came from a CNN article that was written in 2018 by Dakin Andone and Dan Simon. Butch Ford would become the assistant district attorney on this case, and after watching all of the surveillance footage that they gathered, he says that this is the worst video he has ever seen, and he has seen a lot of videos. Butch would also agree that this was a racially motivated attack. He gives an example that when John Cowell was in prison, he verbally assaulted a black female guard at the prison. And he did also agree with the premeditation and the lying in wait. During this entire trial process, John Cowell was extremely combative in court. He refused to answer any questions. He would just literally scream in the courtroom. He was always disrupting the courtroom. And the DA, Butch Ford, said that he listened to every single jail call that Cowell had. And John Cowell discussed his entire trial strategy on these calls. He told his aunt, I believe it was, he said that he would need to stop taking his medication because he wanted to appear crazier. Regardless of all of John Cowell's tactics and claims, on July 17th, 2020, he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Earlier, I stated that when they found out who John Cowell was, they realized that just 4 days before this attack, he had been caught by the BART station security guards because he wasn't paying for his fares. So the family of Nia Wilson decided that they were going to sue BART for failing to protect Nia and Latifah. And this was specifically because of these transit officers that caught John Cowell skipping the fares a few days before the attack and because of his previous arrest at a BART station. I wasn't able to find any information on whether or not this civil suit is still ongoing. I just wanted to give you guys that information that, yeah, they did file a suit against BART, and rightfully so. The following information was taken from an article in The Guardian in July 2020. Byron Brown, this is one of Nia Wilson's cousins, described the court process as deeply traumatizing, saying, "I'm relieved because we don't have to wake up in the morning to go to court. Every time we went, it felt like we were reliving the moment over and over again. But I'll never really feel relief because she's not here. She was young and we planned a whole lifetime. We expected her to grow up with all of us." The Oakland-based artist DeAndre Drake, who goes by Airballin', he unveiled a casket featuring Wilson's face amid about a dozen other portraits of Black Americans, including Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor. Nia's mother recalls a moment at Nia's memorial when she saw a young man pointing at her daughter's image on Drake's casket, and the young man asked, "Is that Brianna or Nia?" And her mother replied, "We told him who we were, and it was so humbling that Nia is a household name. It was like it could have been his sister, cousin, or auntie. It's a blessing and a curse," Nia's mother said. "No one wants their child immortalized like this, but the blessing is that they'll never forget about her." To watch this family on any of the interviews, or there's a Hulu documentary, it's called Hashtag Text Me When You Get Home. There's an episode on Nia Wilson and her family. This tears your heart apart to see this family. When I first heard about this story, the main reason I wanted to cover it was because of the family and the family's love, reaction to everything, the quick response to everything, the way that this family just, the way they love each other, it comes straight through the television you're watching, and it comes straight through the podcast you're listening to, and it just like hits you right in the heart. Just how much they love each other, how much they loved Nia. And it's just inspiring to see how well they handled it, how well they cope with it. As I said in the beginning, when I started my podcast, I wanted to really respect the families that are left after the aftermath. And that's why I named the show Residue. And it's, you know, it's what's left behind. It's the family, the friends, the loved ones, the community, and who are left behind to make a difference, to keep the memory alive, to just give a reason for a tragedy. And I feel like the Wilson family is the epitome of the definition of what I wanted Residue to stand for. Ansar L. Mohammed created the Nia Wilson Foundation, and it was established on February 27th, 2019. Our mission is to provide resources that will generate counseling services, housing, and employment for young men and women. Our goal is to honor the life and memory of Nia Wilson. We at Nia Wilson Foundation are driven by a single goal: to do our part in making the world a better place for all. We strive to build productive relationships and make positive impact with all of our pursuits. Please consider donating to the Nia Wilson Foundation. You can find that website at niawilsonfoundation.org. On their website, you can find information about women's etiquette, self-defense, homeless outreach, and mental health counseling. Shortly after the death of his daughter, Nia's father, Ansar, suffered a stroke. He lived. He says he has little to no movement on one side of his body, but he said that his two dogs are what keep him going every day. Latifa and Tashaya still live with guilt, thinking that they could have done or they should have done more to save their sister. Latifa was even quoted as saying, "I wish it were me." Nia's family will continue to keep her memory alive. And like Nia's mother said earlier in this episode, it's a blessing and a curse. No one wants their child immortalized like this, but the blessing is that they'll never forget about Nia. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Residue. I'm sorry that I lost my cool there for a little bit. That's me, though. If you knew me in real life, you know that I probably swear every three words. But this one angered me. This one saddened me. I will be carrying this one with me forever. And I hope that you all remember to stay safe, stay paranoid. Please consider leaving Residue a review or just follow me on the socials. You can find me at Instagram, Residue Podcast, at Facebook, Residue, a true crime podcast, or just, you know, share my episodes with someone you know. That would be the greatest compliment that I can get. And let me tell you, when someone does share something or write something, give me a comment that makes me smile, it's like, it's a great feeling. It becomes the highlight of my day. So hopefully I will hear from all of you at some point. Thank you so much, and I will see you again next week.